Tonight we'll go from verses 1 to 23 of chapter 56. What is chapter 56 called? Shaman Takaju. Famous chapter. Very interesting pastime. So we'll read the first 23 verses of chapter 56. Shukadev Goswami said, having offended Lord Krishna, Satrajit tried as best he could to atone by presenting him with his daughter and the Shamantaka jewel. Maharaj Parikshit inquired, O Brahmana, what did King Satrajit do to offend Lord Krishna? Where did he get the Shamantaka jewel? And why did he give his daughter to the Supreme Lord? Sukadev Goswami said, Surya, the sun god, felt great affection for his devotee, Satrajit. Acting as his greatest friend, the demigod gave him the jewel called Shamantaka as a token of his satisfaction. So this is an interesting pastime because the details are not given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the deepest of all the scriptures. Lord Chaitanya preferred to hear Bhagavatam over any other scripture. So it's considered Granta Raj, the deepest of all of the Shastras. But the commentaries of the previous acharyas go even further and even deeper and explain things which are not found even in the Bhagavatam itself. So in Lalita Madhava, Rupa Goswami gives many of the details, you could say behind the scenes, which discuss and describe what's going on here, but it gives you the hidden understanding of what takes place. Same as the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. When he writes his commentary, then he gives explanations which are not spoken of directly in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's why Prabhupada says that the commentaries of the acharyas, the purport, is even more important than the verse. You can read the Bhagavatam, the verses, but the purport is more important. So Prabhupada's purports, in one sense, are more important because they illuminate or describe the pastime of the Bhagavatam. And the commentaries of the acharyas, they describe the details which are found within the Bhagavatam. Now Prabhupada says in the very first verse, chapter 1, canto 1, verse 1 of the Bhagavatam, there's a very long purport for the very first verse. Maybe even Prabhupada's longest purport in the whole Bhagavatam. I'm not sure, but it's very long. 14 paragraphs in Prabhupada writes. So Prabhupada says in the very first purport of the Bhagavatam, he says that we must study all of the writings of all the previous acharyas. So we have to study everything which is written by our acharyas eventually. First of all, we have to ground ourselves in Prabhupada's books. You have to become a scholar. That's why we do these courses. You know, we study Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti Vedanta, and then Bhakti Sarvabhauma. Because then you get that title. Now, once you pass your exams and you get it, then you have that title. Just like Prabhupada was called, Bhakti Vedanta Swami. So, if you finish the Bhakti Vaibhav course, you can be called Bhakti Vaibhav. Sri Chaitanya Bhakti Vaibhav Prabhu. Did you get the certificate for Bhakti Vaibhav? You did? Yeah, so Sri Ram Bhakti Vaibhav Prabhu. Okay. You can put those initials in front of your name. BV? Like that. And everyone can say Bhakti Vaibhav Prabhu, Hare Krishna. And that's all. So this is, that's why Prabhupada gave the examination process. Because we're meant to become learned in his books. Prabhupada's books were meant to become scholars, actually. Prabhupada said we should know the books like the lawyers know the law books or the Christians know the Bible. The Christians know the Bible very well. You know, the Christians, they always say in John 4:18 it says, and they give you the verse. And the lawyer also, he reads all the, and then he can say in his court case, he can say in this particular court, this particular situation, it says this. So he knows the books. So Prabhupada said we should know his books like that. So we should know Prabhupada's books, and then simultaneously, while we study Prabhupada's books, we can also study the books of the previous acharyas, which is what we're doing here. Like when I prepare this class, I'm reading Prabhupada's books. This is not actually Prabhupada's commentary at this point, because Prabhupada only commented up to the 13th chapter of the 10th canto. But you know, we take it like that. It's Prabhupada's books. But then it's the commentaries of the acharyas, which we're studying side by side. So Prabhupada's books are the foundation, and then the commentaries of the acharyas are like complementing and helping us to understand things even deeper. So we find in the Lalita Madhava by Rupa Goswami, then he gives the explanation of what's taking place. So the different gopis, when Krishna left Vrindavan, then the different gopis were feeling intense separation from Krishna. Srimati Radharani, Lalita, Vishakha, all of them were feeling intense separation. So Krishna left, and then actually in Lalita Madhava, it describes by Rupa Goswami, they were so distraught that they actually gave up their bodies in separation from Krishna. It says that Srimati Radharani entered the Jamuna, and as she was entering the Jamuna, she went underwater, and Vishakha was following her. And when she got underwater, she actually saw Krishna. So she went to Krishna, and Krishna actually was there. He manifested, even though apparently he was outside. And then when she embraced him, she lost consciousness. And then at that time, the sun god came, and Krishna passed Srimati Radharani to the sun god and said, please take care of her. And then Vishakha also had entered, and she also followed. Vishakha, the Jamuna, which they had entered into, is actually an expansion of Vishakha. So Vishakha and Radharani were taken by the sun god to the sun planet. And Lalita, when she saw Radharani and Vishakha enter, and she saw they did not come back, they drowned, apparently, she went to Govardhan Hill, and she jumped off the hill to give up her life. And then all the different gopis, in different ways, they left their body. And Chandravali, because there are eight principal gopis, you remember? So there's Radharani, Lalita, Vishakha, Saibya, Chandravali, Padma. Chandravali, Padma, Saibya, and my brain's not working 100%. I'm sorry. So there's those, Shama, Vishakha, Lalita, Radha, Chandravali, Padma, Saibya, and Bud. Is it Bud? Bud is one of the wives. No, that's the eighth principle. So anyway, there are eight principles. I'm sorry, my brain's not working properly, so I can't give you the eight. But so they gave up their bodies. And Chandravali, we just read, she was taken. Her husband, Govardhan Mala, passed away. So she was left in Vrindavan. And then the king, Bhishmaka, came and took her to his kingdom. And then she became known as the daughter of Bhishmaka, and she became known as Rukmini. And that's why we heard in the previous chapter, Krishna kidnapped Rukmini. And when he saw her, the first thing he thought, it's Chandravali. Because Krishna got news in Dwarka, that in Mathura and then Dwarka, that the gopis had committed suicide. So he was feeling the most intense guilt, because he left Vrindavan, they could not live without him, they had left their bodies. So he was feeling intense guilt and separation. And then when he saw Chandravali, he thought, she's alive. So he was so happy. And she's known as Rukmini. So then, now it will be described how the others manifest. So he has 16,108 wives. So you have the eight principal gopis, who we mentioned. We mentioned seven of them. Bhadra, is it?
Okay.
There is, she's the eighth one.
Yeah. So left wing, Radharani, Lalita, Vishaka, Shyam Sakhi, and right wing, Chandravali, Padma, Bhadra, and Saiki.
Okay, so Bhadra, yeah. Okay. Because Bhadra is one of the wives also, yeah. One of the eight wives is called Bhadra. That's why I was a little confused. Thank you. So Shaibya, Padma, Bhadra, and Chandravali. And then Sharma, Lalita, Radha, and Vishaka. So they became the eight principal queens. They manifest again as the eight principal queens. And then there was 16,100 other gopis who were also very dear to Krishna. They were stolen by... Yeah, we'll hear the pastime soon of how Bhumasura, that will come up in the next few chapters. He came to Vrindavan and stole 16,100 gopis. And then Krishna, he delivers them. So you'll see this. So everyone's starting to manifest again. So Krishna has been separated from the gopis, but now he's getting them back. So in this chapter, we'll see the next two gopis. Chandravali has arrived as Rukmini, and now we'll see two other gopis will come. So who comes now? No, Krishna gets Jambavati, who is Lalita. So Lalita is given back to Krishna. She is Jambavati. And Satchabhama. Satchabhama is Radharani. So we'll describe that pastime of how they manifest. So the Acharyas are describing, Lalita Madhava describes all of this. How all of these gopis re-manifest. Now, simultaneously, this chapter is called the Shamantaka Jewel. So the Shamantaka Jewel, we mentioned to you, the Shamantaka Jewel was from Vrindavan. You know the pastime was there earlier in the 10th canto. Krishna's in Vrindavan, and then Shankachuda, that demon came. And Krishna and Balaram, it was a Rasa Purnima, it was a full moon night, they were having Rasa dance together with their gopis. Balaram had his gopis, Krishna had his gopis, and they were all doing Rasa dance together. Normally Krishna is separate. Balaram does one, Krishna does one. But that night they were together. So all the gopis were there together. That's at Govardhan Hill, near Radhakund. If you go from Radhakund to Manasi Ganga, if you know where I'm talking about halfway down in that area, that's where they were having the Leela. So then that Shankachuda, that demon, he came. And then he stole the gopis and started taking them away. And then they called out, Krishna, Balaram. And then Krishna, he said to Balaram, you guard the gopis, I'll go and get him. So he went, and then it says that he smashed him. He got Shankachuda, and with his fist he went, bang, smashed him, right? And Shankachuda, dead. And he was very proud, Shankachuda. He was an associate of Kuvera. And being an associate of Kuvera, he's very rich. And he's very powerful. So he had one beautiful jewel which he used to wear on the head. So Krishna snapped it out, and then he went back and he wanted to give it to Radharani. But if he gave it to Radharani, everyone will get upset. All the gopis think, why did she get it? Actually, they wouldn't think like that because they love Radharani, so they would. But Krishna just thought, let me not cause problems. So he gave it to Lord Balaram. And then later, Balaram gave it to Radharani. So when Radharani goes into the Jamuna, she has the Shyamantaka jewel. Sun God takes her. So then he has both now. He has the Shyamantaka jewel and Srimati Radharani and Vishakha. They're all up on the sun planet. So now they all manifest. So when he sends Radharani back to earth as Satyabhama, which happens in this chapter, and Vishakha comes as Kalindi. Kalindi, one of Krishna's wives. She'll come soon. Kalindi. And then the Shyamantaka jewel is also given when Radharani comes back as Satyabhama. So also it describes that that Shankachuda demon, he was? Sridharma. He was Radharani's brother. Yeah, there's some cursing. So it's like an expansion of him. Became the demon. And then he was killed. Because he touched the gopis. So no one could touch the gopis. He grabbed the gopis and took them away. So he was an eternal associate, but he'd taken the form of a demon. It was like an expansion. Took the form of the demon. So that brings us up to this point. So, any points?
When Krishna established Dwarka, was it like 20 years old?
Yeah, 28. Yeah, because 10 years Vrindavan, 18 years Mathura, 28, roughly. Any point? Okay. Chandravali. Yeah, she lived with him for years and then she forgot. So when they all left Vrindavan, Yogamaya covered them and then they forgot who they were previously. So now she thinks I am... When she was taken to Bhishmaka's kingdom, then she they started calling her Rukmini and she forgot that she was Chandravali. It's a little complicated, all of these things. And the acharyas say different things also. Because Rukmini and Satyabhama, when they meet for the first time, Satyabhama is Radharani. So she's kind of... It says that they forgot who they were, but in another sense, she's kind of remembering. Because when she sees her, she goes, she looks like Chandravali. So the acharyas, when they're explaining it, it's all... There's so many different... Sometimes they remember, sometimes forgetting it. But in general, the general explanation is that they forget by the arrangement of Yogamaya. So they don't remember Krishna in Vrindavan. But then it says that in Lalita Madhava, it says that when Satyabhama is in Nava Vrindavan in Dwarka, she keeps thinking of the boy who she loved in Vrindavan. So it's like she can't remember that she was Radharani, but she is always thinking of this cowherd boy she used to know. So sometimes it says they remember, sometimes it says they forget. So we can only understand all of this up to a point. You know, if you want to, you can't really understand it because there's apparent contradictions. Prabhupada said, if you want to understand it all, go back to the spiritual world. Right? And then Krishna will let you know what you need to know. And what you don't need to know, he will cover you. It's Vrindavan.
It's also Lalita Mala, Vidyatha Mala, and they say that it's
Yeah, it's very complicated. I mean, Dwarka exists. There is a Dwarka in Galoka Vrindavan. There's Vrindavan, there's Mathura, there's Dwarka, it all exists. But then, because they're so much intensely absorbed, even when they're in Dwarka, they're thinking of Vrindavan. So in one sense, it says it's like a dream. So it's there, it's not there, it's like the whole thing is very...
So this Radharani Lalita, they all went to Jamuna when Krishna was 28 years old. And then we have this pastime of Krishna's headache. The
Gopi's dust.
So that also happened much later.
I think that's when Krishna's in Vrindavan.
He starts to get dust from Rukmini.
Dwarka, is it?
Satyabhama and all that. And then he sends them to Vrindavan. So Gopi are still there.
There's lots of ways to explain it because it says that Krishna himself never leaves Vrindavan. And now we're talking about him being in Dwarka. It says he's in Vrindavan, right? And then it says that he's uppercut. He's in Vrindavan, but no one can see him. So the gopis never leave. It's all still going on. When Akrura came in, he saw separation. But first of all, he saw union. So Krishna's there, he's not there. So the whole thing is very... The only way to reconcile, you have to go back to the spiritual world. That's the only way. I mean, in the spiritual world, Krishna won't reveal everything to you anyway. Because he has to cover everyone so they can participate in the pastime. So it's beyond explanation. So, any other point? Okay. Wearing the jewel on his neck, Satrajit entered Dwarka. He shone as brightly as the sun itself. O king... And thus he went unrecognized because of the jewel's effulgence. The residents of Dwarka, as the people looked at Satrajit from a distance, his brilliance blinded them. They presumed he was the sun god, Surya, and went to tell Lord Krishna, who was at that time playing at dice. So the basic principle, this must be understood. No, because back in the first canto, chapter 3, verse 28, we have the Paribhasa Sutra of the Bhagavatam. You know that verse? Ete chamsa kalapumsa Krishna's tu Bhagavan swayam. In one sense, that's the most important line in the whole Bhagavatam. Krishna's tu Bhagavan swayam. Krishna is the supreme entity. The whole Bhagavatam is just to explain that one line. Right, Krishna is the supreme entity. Right. So here we see in these pastimes that it is being explained. Krishna is the supreme entity. Because even the sun god is coming to visit Krishna. Even though it's not the sun god, Satrajit. But the point is, the gods were coming. Well, you know the pastime later on, Brahma comes. He enters into... Dwarka, you know, we'll see all through this. We're going to see Krishna. Krishna's already defeated Indra, but he defeats him again. There's another pastime. He defeats Shiva. Right? There's a big fight, and Shiva fights with Krishna. Krishna defeats him. He goes to visit Mahavishnu, his own expansion. Mahavishnu wants to see Krishna, so he stole some children so that Krishna would go. So all of these points are just teaching us one point. Krishna is the supreme entity. So that's why it says here that even it wasn't completely surprising for the sun god to come into Dwarka and visit Krishna. Because different gods were coming in. Just like, you know, if we saw like the sun god walk into this temple. Now, how would we feel? We'd be amazed. But on another level, we would think, well, that Radha Ballabha is here, so he's obviously coming to see Radha Ballabha. So you'd say, would you like some Charanamrita? Would you like some Puris? So you have to serve the guest. So in Dwarka, they saw these gods were coming. to visit Krishna. So the whole Bhagavatam is teaching us that Krishna is the supreme entity. Any points? The residents of Dwaraka said, "Obeisances unto you, O Narayana, O holder of the conch, disc, and club, O lotus eyed Damodar, O Govinda, O cherished descendant of Yadu." So the Sanskrit is very beautiful. It's all Krishna's names. Narayana namastestu, Shankar Chakra Gadadara, Damodara Ravindaksha, Govinda Yadu Nandana. So it is mentioned that to attract Krishna, you have to chant his holy name with affection. Just like when someone says your name, it attracts us. We become attracted when we hear our name, isn't it? I think all of us experience that. Is it true? When we hear it.
Most pleasurable sound.
Most what?
Most pleasurable sound is the person's name to hear.
Yeah, generally that's true. So we hear our name, right? Immediately we become attracted. Like if someone's in the next room, I hear them say Keshava, then I mean, like, who is that? Who is saying that? So then that is natural. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam, in the purport, it might even be the first verse, the very first verse, the purport. Prabhupada says that Krishna likes to hear the sound of his name. And he says, because Krishna likes to, then we also like to, because we're created in the image of Krishna. So it's Krishna's psychology. It's natural. Someone says your name, you're like, who is saying? Now, how someone says our name, that's the important factor. Most of us in this room, we understand that when someone is saying your name with affection, right, it has a very different effect on the consciousness to when someone says your name angrily. Right? We don't like to hear our names in anger. When someone says, oh, like that. And, you know, we become like it. You know, it doesn't endear us. But when someone says our name with affection, it captures our heart. So Krishna, the Dwarkabasis, they go to him and they say all these beautiful names of Krishna. Hey Yadunanda, hey Aravinda Aksha. They say all these beautiful Govinda Damodar, like that. So it's not so much that they're just chanting his name, because they're affectionately calling his name, then Krishna becomes captivated. So we have to learn to chant the name like that. Because it's the main item of our sadhana. Our main item of our sadhana is Naam Kirtan. We chant. But who of us is chanting with affection? So unless you learn to chant with affection, your chanting is not successful, because it will not attract Krishna. Most of the time we're chanting inattentively. So you chant inattentively. How does that attract someone? The person cannot become attracted. How can Krishna become attracted? So we must chant in a very particular way. This is described in chapter 8 of the first canto, the prayers of Queen Kunti. So she discusses that when the holy name, Prabhupada discusses in the purport, there's a quality to the chanting of the holy name. What is the quality of your chanting? You can chant the holy name, but what is the quality of it? Is it spoken affectionately? Then Krishna becomes attractive. Otherwise, we don't capture Krishna. You can chant 16 rounds every day for the rest of your life. You can chant 64 rounds a day for the rest of your life. But if you don't chant with affection, you won't capture Krishna. That's the point. So there has to be a cultivation of the chanting process. That's what it's all about. Devotees have to do this. And you see, devotees advance when they begin to cultivate the chanting. Yeah, we all chant, that's okay, that's there. But see, the devotees who are advancing, they're cultivating their chanting. Sachinandana Swami, my Shiksha Guru, you know, for 15 years or something, I've been going to these japa retreats with Sachinandan Swami and Burujan Prabhu. For years, years and years, I've been going for these retreats. They're teaching us how to cultivate our chanting of the holy name. So Sachinandan Swami, I remember he said one time he was teaching us, he said that devotees think, how do I get Krishna's mercy? Right? So many things we do to get Krishna's mercy in our lives. You know, we preach, and we do seva. So many things we do. But then he said in his experience, you know, he'd done so many different types of service over the years for Krishna. You know, a lot of preaching and initiating disciples and preaching and lots of different types of service. But he said his realization was that his advancement ultimately comes down to the quality of his chanting. How well are you chanting the holy name? That's how you advance in Krishna consciousness. If you don't chant properly, then you don't advance properly. You can do everything else, but the chanting is not good, then. So that's what we have to cultivate. Actually, it's the first service. When you see it like that, when you have that realization, then your spiritual life really takes off. That's my first service, right? To chant attentively. Right? And then ultimately cultivate the chanting, so it becomes affectionate. That's when you really begin to advance, when it becomes your prime duty. I know for myself, like, most of the time it's my main service, my chanting. I make that my main focus. But because we get so busy, so many other services, you know, it doesn't always get as much, like, you know, the last 2 days of the farm, we chopped like 35 tons of wood. A huge weekend, you know what? And I was exhausted. You know, today I actually felt like today I may not be able to give class. I was so tired. You know, I just felt like I may not be able to give class. I don't feel like that very often. Yeah, but today I really felt tired. I thought maybe I can't give class. I'm just too tired. And then I laid down. I fell asleep. And then I woke up. Thought, oh my God, I have to go to Melbourne. And then, jump in the car and then. Get to Melbourne. I ring Sri Chaitanya Prabhu, quickly start the kirtan. I'm running late. So too tired. But last couple of days my chanting wasn't great because I was so tired. Yeah, I woke up this morning and chanting is like, oh Krishna, why do you do this to me? You know, I was making deals in my mind. I was thinking, you know, if I give you like $10,000, is that okay? If that's my service today instead of chanting because I'm too tired. And then I thought in my mind, I don't want to give 10 because then I won't have the money. How about I just give you 1,000? And I thought, that's not very fair. You know, 1,000. Yeah, like, you know, it's like that. So anyway, so you just chant your rounds. But in my mind, I'm thinking like this. You know, I'm thinking, I'm really tired. And I have to chant. And the chanting was like, you know, hard to get deeply into. You know, real experiences. Sometimes so tired, it's hard to chant nicely. One time, Burujan Prabhu said to me, he said, sometimes my rounds are atrocious. But still I do them. Because we have to do them. That's our duty. But sometimes we're too tired or so many other services. By the time we get to our chanting, it's not the best. So what I do in my spiritual life is, I've said many times before, when it comes to Kartik Mass, then I just drop everything. Right? And my chanting becomes number one for the whole month. That's the main service. I mean, it's my main service all year round. But in Kartik, I don't care. Other services, yeah, okay. They all get done, but chanting 100% number one. And rest of the year, as much as I can, I try to focus on, you know, making my chanting, but sometimes it's a struggle. It's a competition. And even Purushottam must begin soon. What day? 16? 16. Okay, what's the date? 7th. 7th. What day is
16?
Wednesday. Wednesday? So not next week, one after. Yeah, so 10 days away. Okay, so not this Wednesday. So it says Purushottam Mass is as auspicious as Kartik Mass. Well, only happens every 3 or 4 years. So that's something you can do as well. That can be a boost for you. Purushottam Mass followed very strictly. With that, and then you'll make advancement. So the point is, we have to cultivate our chanting. Because you want to attract the Supreme Lord. The residents of Dwarka, they attracted him. What was he doing? Now they went to see him, and what was he doing? Playing dice. Sitting with someone, Balaram or Rukmini or someone, Satyaki, someone, Uddhava, someone, playing dice. Supreme Personality of Godhead. O Damodar, they come to the door. O Damodar. Sun God is outside. He's come to see you. Krishna's just playing dice. Just like, tell him to come. That's Sun God. Bring him. Bring him. Supreme Lord, so powerful. This is the Supreme Lord. Like Prabhupada had a godbrother who was initiated by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was German godbrother. And then his conclusion, because he traveled through India, he saw all the gods. And he said, which one is the supreme? Must be the Krishna, the one who's playing the flute. Because everyone else is working, doing this, doing that, doing that. But this one just playing like this. This guy is supreme. So you see, he's just playing the dice. Yeah, bring that god. He wants to see me, tell him to come. The sun god is immeasurably powerful. The sun god is incredibly powerful. Krishna says, yeah, bring him. So how did they attract that powerful person who is unconquerable, Ajita, by the quality of the chanting? They said, oh, Damodar, come. Please, someone has come to see you. Then he listens to them because there's so much affection in their chanting. Any point? Okay. Lord Savita has come to see you, O Lord of the universe. He is blinding everyone's eyes with his intensely effulgent rays. The most exalted demigods in the three worlds are certainly anxious to seek you out, O Lord, now that you have hidden yourself among the Yadu dynasty. Thus, the unborn sun god has come to see you here. King Satrajit entered his opulent home. I missed one? Which one are we on?
Nine.
Shukadeva Goswami continued, hearing these innocent words, the lotus-eyed Lord smiled broadly and said, this is not the sun god Ravi, but rather Satrajit, who is glowing because of his jewel. King Satrajit entered his opulent home, festively executing auspicious rituals. He had qualified brahmanas install the Shamantaka jewel in the house's temple room. So this was the system. No, it still is the system. Every house should have a temple room. That's the system. The deity should be worshipped. For most grihasthas, it's better to have pictures, not actual deities. I was listening to one of the gurus speak a while ago, and he made a very interesting point, which I think I agree with. It's very interesting. He said, actually, the deity worship is for the vanaprasthas. Because he said, most of the grihasthas have the deities in the home, but they don't actually worship the deity to the proper standard. And we see, I've seen many grihasthas. They have the deities in their house, but really the standard's not really high enough level, you know, for the deity. It should be a very nice level. So Prabhupada actually said, have pictures in your home. Deity worship is another thing. Deity worship, you have to be very serious. And it's hard for the grihasthas because you've got kids, you have a job. It's hard to worship the deity nicely. In the previous days, there was more time. People had more time. These days, we hardly have time. Everyone's right, like I'm rushing just to even get here to give class. What to speak of all of you with your jobs and everything. You had to work hard all day and then come to the class. And then in between, you have to worship the deity nicely. So Prabhupada said, generally, have the picture at home. And if you're going to worship, worship the deities here in the temple. If you worship at home, the deity has to be nice standard. Has to be regulated. Has to be there. It cannot be whimsical. So here, Satrajit, he has temple room. When Krishna was living in Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj had a temple room. And the deity was worshipped. So in Nanda Maharaj's house, Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead, was living there. But still they had a temple room. Because they didn't see he was God. He was their son. So they had a temple room of? Narayan. Lakshmi Narayan. So they would take the boga, they would cook, and then take it off to the deity. And then from the prasad would be offered to Krishna. And Balaram, Nanda Maharaj, everyone would take the prasad. That's their sentiment. Even it says early in the 10th canto, when Krishna was being attacked by demons like Trinavata and different demons, they would pray, "Oh, Narayan, please save Krishna." So they prayed to God to save Krishna. They would worship God in their temple, in their home, for Krishna's benefit. So the point is, there should be a temple room in our house. One house for the deity. One room, sorry, for the deity. Or if you have a small house, then maybe it's in your main room or something like that. This is only my personal opinion, but in my ashram, Giriraj, my DD, he is in his own room. I see many of the grihasthas they keep in the family room, like the general room. But then everyone's just talking and, you know, watching television. And kids are fighting and husband and wife are fighting and all sorts of things. In my opinion, it's up to you. Every devotee will do what they choose. That's your choice. But I don't put the deity in the main room. I keep Giriraj in his own room. So when I go in there, it's just concentrate on him. And there's pictures around the house. Pictures are there, but you know where the deity is, that, in my opinion, should be. Some devotees put in the main room. It's okay if he's in the main room. But if he's in the main room, you have to make sure that that's like a temple in there. You can't just do whatever you want because you're with the deity. Like it says when you go to see Radha Vallabha, Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Devotion, you can't speak in front of the deity. You know, sometimes you see devotees in the temple room just talking and like that. If you want to talk, you should go outside. The only talking in the temple room should be Krishna Katha. You shouldn't just have a casual conversation. Not in front of Krishna. Now, Rupa Goswami says the focus should be on the deity. So that's my opinion. Also in the house, it should be like that. If you're going to keep me in the main room, then be very conscious. Otherwise, it might be some offences. So, any point?
duties of Gaur Nithai are okay to have, right, for Grihasthas?
Gaur Nithai? Yeah. Duties are okay to have, but you have to keep the standard, that's the point.
Gaur Nithai standard is very flexible, it's gentle, appreciate.
No, it's not flexible, there has to be a standard there too. Bulga has to be on time, dressing has to be there. Can't just, oh, it's Gaur Nithai, just do it. It doesn't work like that. Gauranga is Krishna. He's more lenient and more merciful, but he's Krishna. So you can't just, you know. Deity worship has to be regular, that's the point. Just like we have here in the temple, so 7 offerings a day. Right? How many years have the 7 offerings been taking place? Right? I think 1975, I think. Maybe 73, because Radha Vallabha came to Australia in 73. So maybe since 73. How many days have they not had 7 offerings?
Zero.
That's right, 0. That's deity worship. That's deity worship. So in your house, maybe you only offer 2 times bhoga, that's okay, but that means every day, 2 times. Doesn't mean, you know, one time, you know, on Sunday once or... Well, then I see devotees all the time. They say, oh, I'm going overseas to India. So I put the deities to sleep. How about we put you to sleep? Oh, we don't feed you for a month. How do you like it? It's not actually a good system. I see devotees do it all the time. Oh, I put my devotees to rest when I'm traveling. No, it doesn't work like that. You know, if you have deities, it means every day you have to do the seva. Otherwise, just have the picture. Picture is flexible. That's okay. Picture means, you know, you didn't offer the bhoga one day. That's no problem. The picture is there. Whenever you want to offer the bhoga, the picture is there. But the deity must be worshipped. That's the point. Any point? Each day, the gem would produce 8 bharas of gold. My dear Prabhu, and the place in which it was kept and properly worshipped would be free from calamities such as famine or untimely death, and also of evils like snake bites, mental and physical disorders, and the presence of deceitful persons. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
Sridhar Swami gives the following sastric reference concerning the para. 4 rice grains are called 1 guna, 5 gunjas, 1 pana, 8 panas, 1 shara, 4 sharas, 1 pala, and 100 palas, 1 tula. 20 tulas make up 1 hara. Since there are about 3,700 grains of rice in any ounce, the Shamataka jewel was producing approximately 170 pounds of gold every day.
Okay. So this will be on your exam. You have to remember, what is a gunja, what is a bara, what is a... I'm just joking, you don't need to remember, but what is the point? The Shamantaka jewel was producing gold, 170 pounds. Like, I think it's like that. It's like probably a man like that. It's significant. You know, like if you saw that much gold every day, you know, you go to your altar and there's like that much gold. It's significant. I mean, these days, that's like, that's it. That much gold, you don't have to work for about 7 lifetimes. That's a lot of gold. Like that, in this today's... the standard, you know, that's it. You know, we could build another temple in Melbourne, the Gurukul, and then just like pay every debt. It's like, that's an insane amount of gold. Right. So every day that was coming, I mean, back then that was different because there was so much gold around, but, you know, still that much was being produced. So one of the main points of this chapter is don't become bewildered by material facility. How do you not become bewildered? know, if you got that much gold, you would be bewildered. I'd be bewildered. If I had that much gold, I'd be like, you know, my head would explode. You know, it's like thinking what I can do. Like, I can do that, I can do that, I can do that. It's like unlimited. So to not become bewildered, the only way you can do that, you have to offer that to Krishna. And that's not an easy thing to do. You have that much gold and then you just got to give all of that to Krishna. Right? Most people would have a heart attack. Right? I have to give it all to Krishna? Are you serious? You know, your hands would be shaking, you'd be like, oh, you'd be sweating, you'd be like, oh. But that is the distraction of material opulence. You get material opulence, you become bewildered. So therefore, our wealth has to be used in Krishna's service. And that's why it's difficult if you're a wealthy person. It is difficult to surrender to Krishna. Because you become bewildered. So that's why Rupa Goswami says you must give a portion of your wealth to Krishna. Right? He actually says, how much? 50%. He says 50% you have to give. This day and age, that's very difficult. That's very difficult in this day and age because of the price of living. It's very difficult to give 50%. So then he says 25% you should keep for emergencies. 50% you give to the devotees for preaching. And the other 25%, that's what you live on. That's very difficult in this day and age. So the principle in this day and age is give whatever you can and whatever you desire to give. Obviously, the more you give, the more benefit you get. But you have to give what is manageable. And also, see, the way it is that if you're using the money that you have, you can't give it all to the temple because the price of living is so expensive in these days. But if your house is an ashram and you're making your family and children Krishna conscious, you are getting the benefit. That is purifying you. It means you're not using the wealth in the wrong way. And then whatever you can afford, you give that to the deities. How much should we give to the deities? We should give enough that we feel it, like it hurts us. Some pain should be there, you know, because we all know what it's like. You know, like, say you got $100, right? And then you have $100 and you give $50 away, right? And, you know, if you've got money, you don't feel it. But then you go, maybe 70. Then you start to feel it, like, oh, well, that was, you know. That's how much you should give. If you don't know how much you should give, give enough that it hurts a bit. Not too much. I mean, if you can give it all, then give it all. Like Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, he had that one disciple. He wasn't rich, but everything he earned, he used to give to Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur. And then his wife had to come and say to Maharaj, please, he just gave everything. I haven't got any money. I can't feed the kids or anything. So Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur would give money back to her. Now he would come, and a couple of hours later she would come, and then he would give money back. Yeah, because his sentiment was correct. I want to give everything to my guru, that's correct. But that's not practical, because now the kids and wife can't be fed. So the guru would say, okay, here, take it. Yeah. So you should, that's how much you should give. You should feel inconvenience. You know, the people that have a lot of money and they go to the hundi, they put $5 in and then... No significant advancement. Advancement has to be significant. Have to give significantly to our Krishna consciousness.
Even that hurts them.
What's that?
Even that $5 hurts them.
Yeah, that's good. That's because they don't have any realization. That's Kanishta Adhikari. When you're Majjhima Adhikari, you give a lot. Significant. Okay.
Here it says there's no untimely death in the family, no untimely death,
Yeah.
But whether Satraj is better, what's clear?
Yeah, that's next. Now we're going to hear why. On one occasion, Lord Krishna requested Satrajit to give the jewel to the Yadu king, Ugrasen. But Satrajit was so greedy that he refused. He gave no thought to the seriousness of the offense he committed by denying the Lord's request. So who asked him to give? Who asked us to give? Guru. Who is Guru? Krishna's representative. If you disobey the order of the Guru says give, and you don't give, that's an offense. In Dwarka, the Guru is Krishna. Krishna said, Satrajit, 108.70 pounds a day. This should go to Ugrasen, the king. Ugrasen should have this. And he disobeyed Krishna's instruction. Third offense in chanting the holy name is disobey the orders of the spiritual master. If you disobey, you will not advance. It's an offense. He disobeyed Krishna himself. That's a serious offense. So then what happened? One Satrajit's brother, Prasen, having hung the brilliant jewel about his neck, mounted a horse and went hunting in the forest. Within the cave, a lion killed Prasen with his horse and took the jewel. But when the lion entered a mountain cave, he was killed by Jambavan, who wanted the jewel. Within the cave, Jambavan let his young son have the Shamantaka jewel as a toy to play with. Meanwhile, Satrajit, not seeing his brother return, became deeply troubled. He said, Krishna probably killed my brother, who went to the forest wearing the jewel on his neck. The general populace heard this accusation and began whispering it in one another's ears. So the swans, in this world there are two types of people. There's swans and there's crows. Right? Swans speak nectar, crows speak garbage. These were the crows. All the devotees knew Krishna would not kill Prasen, right? But all the devious people, right, who were controlled by material desires, they said, "Oh, Krishna has killed Prasen, so now he has the Shamantaka jewel." When Lord Krishna heard this rumor, he wanted to remove the stain of his reputation, so he took some of Dwarka's citizens with him and set out to retrace Prasen's path. So this is an important point. We must maintain our honor and our reputation. If we are being attacked, we must defend our reputation. Unless your reputation is so intact that, you know, people can say things no one's going to believe anyway. That's good. But if someone's attacking us and it's unjust, we must defend our reputation. You know, if it's something untrue, you have to go and say, you know, Prabhu, that's not true. I didn't do that. I didn't do like that. The Lord stationed his subjects outside the terrifying pitch dark cave of the king of the bears, and then he entered alone. I missed some verse. Sorry. In the forest, they found Prasen and his horse both killed by the lion. Further on, they found the lion dead on a mountainside, slain by Riksha, Jambavan. The Lord stationed his subjects outside the terrifying, pitch-dark cave of the king of the bears, and then he entered alone. There Lord Krishna saw that the most precious of jewels had been made into a child's plaything. Determined to take it away, he approached the child. The child's nurse cried out in fear upon seeing that extraordinary person standing before them. Jambavan, strongest of the strong, heard her cries and angrily ran toward the Lord.
the child was not a son, it was a daughter, Jambavati, right?
No, it was the son. Jambavati was the daughter. He had many kids. So then, she cried out when she saw Krishna, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said she cried out in ecstasy. She cried out, it wasn't screaming, it was like, oh, there's Krishna. Yeah. But when Jambavan heard a cry, he ran. Who is this? Who is coming in the cave? Who is harming the children? And then he attacked. Like that. But he didn't realize who it was. Because who is Jambavan? He's Lord Ram's devotee. He was in the fight of Lanka. He fought against the Rakshasas. He's a bear. Fought with the monkeys. And he hadn't seen Ram for thousands of years. And suddenly Ram was right in front of him. But he didn't recognize him. So he fought with him for... Which verse do we... 22. Unaware of his true position and thinking him an ordinary man, Jambavan angrily began fighting with the Supreme Lord, his master. The two fought furiously in single combat, each determined to win, contending against each other with various weapons and then with stones, tree trunks, and finally their bare arms. They struggled like two hawks, battling over a piece of flesh. So Krishna was very happy, because it says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, he fought with Kamsa, and he thought that wasn't very difficult. He fought with Chanura, and he thought that wasn't very difficult. Jarasandha. And he thought that was not very difficult. So Krishna was a little frustrated because he wanted a good fight. Right? And Jambavan was also the same. You know, he just killed a lion. So he take the... For him, everyone, just killing everyone. Right? So he, in his heart, he thought, I need someone to fight. He's a warrior. Right? And Krishna's feeling the same way. So Krishna, in his heart, he thought, let me go and fight with Jambavan. Because he's my devotee, and he has power, shakti. So when we fight, that'll be a good fight. So when he came in the cave, they saw each other. They were in ecstasy. Because when warriors see each other, they become ecstatic. Now we can really fight. So then they attacked each other. And this fight went, I think, for 28 days or something. It says in the next few verses. Very good fight for Krishna. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.